The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Bring in senior political columnist for Politico, Jonathan Martin. His latest piece is entitled Trump the Frontrunner? Not so fast. Explain what you're seeing playing out right now, Jonathan.
Hey, Mika, I just think that the Trump is going to win, or Trump's a lock. Conventional wisdom got a little out of hand the last couple of months. I think there's frankly some overcompensation from people who aren't Trump fans, but want to seem like they get it. They're in touch with real America, kind of unlike perhaps they weren't in 2016. But this assumption that he is a sure thing kind of doesn't fully factor in that Donald Trump is Donald Trump, and he's going to say and do things that are going to be detrimental to his own cause, and he's got an aptitude for self-sabotage unlike any politician that we know.
All of the laws that existed under the Trump administration still exist under the Biden administration. You have all the powers that you need. The laws on accepting migrants to this country says the executive may admit migrants. Doesn't say the executive branch shall admit migrants. You can simply say we're full up, we've got too many criminals, and we've got the horrendous thing that happened to Lake and Riley and to others. And we're just full, and we're going to stop taking migrants for a while until we can sort out the mess we have at the border. You have every power to do that now. You just don't utilize those powers. But it isn't about really being good at utilizing the power. We just think you're not obeying the law.
Why did you say the border was secure? Was that a lie? What do you mean by that?
Senator Romney, allow me to assure you that I have honored the oath of office that I have taken.
Let me go back to the question. That's as accurate as it is irrelevant, which is my question is, you said that the border was secure. What did you mean when you said the border was secure? Is that not a lie?
Senator, you've asked me now if that is a lie, and I have assured you that I have honored the oath of office that I have taken.
In what way was it not a lie then?
Senator, with the resources and authorities that we have, it is as secure as it can be.
And so when you come to us and you say, oh gosh, if we only had more legislation, we could do it. Why don't you bring back the executive orders of Donald Trump that seem to be working? You immediately got rid of them for political purposes. The border's a disaster. Why don't you bring back the 92 executive orders that you reversed?
I respectfully, Ranking Member Paul, disagree with the premise of your question.
That's because you refuse to look at the facts, and it's still, you know, I guess insulting to all of us.
Our immigration system, however, is fundamentally broken. Only Congress can fix it.
Look, you saw the president. He was incredibly proud of his uncle's service in uniform. You saw him at the war memorial. It was incredibly emotional and important to him. You saw him respond to all of you when asked about the moment yesterday. And his uncle, who lost his life when the military aircraft he was on crashed in the Pacific after taking off near New Guinea. The president highlighted his uncle's story as he made the case for honoring our sacred commitment to equip those we send to war and to take care of them and their families when they come home. And as he reiterated that the last thing American veterans are suckers or losers, and he wanted to make that clear. He wanted to make
the story.
I mean, look, I don't have anything beyond about what I just laid out.
Did he embellish the story? Well, I don't really have anything additional beyond what I just laid out. That last bit there, of course, is the White House spokesperson clarifying just a little bit about the Uncle Bozy story. The moment we played that for you yesterday, it immediately was entered into the TD vernacular. What a perfect, perfect picture of so much of what we see. Look at the Secretary of Homeland Security. Look at Mayorkas. For three years, he told us the border was totally secure. Turns out even he's admitting that that was one big Uncle Bozy. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, the last show of this week, a fast Moving Week. By the way, a programming note, next week I might sub in from the road, but we're going to be on the road or in the air, I guess, to be more precise, on our way to the Great Northwest for the spring festival season, the start of it anyway. And then we come back for a stop with the seniors here at God's College for a few days for their senior trip. So I will be out of pocket for the entire week. We have some subs lined up. Maybe I can do one remotely. We'll see how that goes. But I'm sure it'll be a fast-moving week any way that you look at it. And I'll be eager and anxious and refreshed, no doubt, to get right back at it when we return to Edmond. Another programming note. May 6th, mark it down on your calendar. On that day, Dinesh D'Souza, he's a best-selling author, a conservative commentator. He's a movie producer. He's going to be on the show. He's going to be in the studio May the 6th. That's on a Monday, just a couple, 3 weeks away. So you can mark that down. Also, mark down May the 5th. If you'd like to visit the Edmond campus, Mr. D'Souza is going to be having a speaking event here in Armstrong Auditorium, or on this campus at Armstrong Auditorium. That'll be at 7:30 p.m., Sunday night, May the 5th. And of course, that day, as some of you probably know, just go to Armstrong Auditorium. I believe that's the website, armstrongauditorium.org. And I think you have to scroll down toward the bottom to get to the speaking engagements. That's the concert series website that we have. But we also have some special guests who speak in the auditorium from time to time as well. So we're very excited about May 5th, and that's the same day that the Celtic Throne performers will be going at it at, I think, 2 in the afternoon. Just go to CelticThrone.com, and you can secure tickets. Well, why not secure tickets for both? I believe the D'Souza event is just $15, so very reasonably priced if you'd like to make a visit to Edmond and see our special guests. But Mr. D'Souza will be, he'll watch Celtic Throne. He'll enjoy some meals together with us for the day and a half that he's here. He has the speaking engagement, the interview. We're also going to make sure he has a private tour of the exhibit there at the lobby of Armstrong Auditorium. And then he has said that he'd like to even do a podcast, one of his own podcasts, on the archaeology exhibit there in the lobby of Armstrong Auditorium. So some exciting developments coming up. that opening bit, the morning meltdown, hopefully reporting that, well, I don't know, Donald Trump is not the front runner. That's a fresh new take. That's an Uncle Bozy. that's totally bogus. That is not what's happening if you're paying attention. But you can see why they trot those people out there, because they hope for it so badly. They just hope he's running behind. But here, as I emphasized on the program yesterday, I mean, just look at the contrast. Just look at the Biden people put out a Chick-fil-A moment that, again, fell flat as they're trying to replicate what Donald Trump just does spur of the moment, spontaneously. No problem for him. His handlers aren't there, like, pointing him in every direction. He's got his Secret Service detail. That's about it. But he goes into Chick-fil-A, he orders milkshakes for everyone in the restaurant. The fake president ordered one milkshake yesterday for himself as he kind of wandered around. And nobody at this gas station or restaurant, whatever it was, certainly nobody's excited. And then, of course, in his case, the handlers are right there next to him because they're terrified that something bad might happen. It's a study in contrast, for sure. Meanwhile, Donald Trump just continues to peel away the minority votes. He's getting celebrities, athletes. I played that clip for you the other day from Stephen A. Smith, the sports commentator. Sports commentary, you can't get more radically left-wing than that. I've got another one from him. He was on with Hannity last night. We'll play that in just a second as well. First, the retired baseball player. This is Johnny Damon. He's comparing and contrasting the fake president with Donald Trump, clip 10.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stories that we hear him talk about, and you just shake your head, and you know, and it's very unfortunate because he is not all there, and Donald Trump has one of the greatest memories ever. I mean, he always knows people's names when we're out at these golf tournaments or whatnot. And Donald Trump is slightly younger, but his mental capacity is just so far ahead.
That's a sports star pointing out the obvious, what should be obvious. This is from PJ Media. It says, last week, Donald Trump made a surprise visit to a Chick-fil-A in Atlanta. During the visit, Trump was enthusiastically greeted by a large black crowd of supporters. It says here, and ordered milkshakes for everyone. It was quite the visit. And a photo of him being hugged by a black woman went viral. It went viral. Everybody wanted to see it. The black woman said, I'm famous. I've made it. Tell my mom I've made it. This was Stephen A. Smith on the Hannity show last night, clip 4.
We want our streets safe. We want to make sure that you've committed a crime. You get to go to jail. You don't sit up there and get arrested and you're out the same day. Let me tell you something right now, Sean. When you talk about the economy, black folks, that means money to everybody. But I got to tell you something. As much as people may have been abhorred by Donald Trump's statement weeks ago, talking about how black folks, he's hearing that black folks find him relatable because what he's going through is similar to what black Americans have gone through. He wasn't lying. He was telling the truth. When you see the law enforcement, the court system and everything else being exercised against him, it is something that black folks throughout this nation can relate to with some of our historic, iconic figures.
There's a black sports commentator talking about his community, the black community, finding Donald Trump relatable. This deep down, they're not going to say it out front. This terrifies the regime media. And so they've got to get the Atlantic writer or whoever it is that has the headline. He's not. Let's revisit this. I don't know if he is the front runner, really. that's a big Uncle Bosey right there. We're gonna use Uncle Bosey as a verb and a noun, just depending upon how we need it. You hear them all the time. Yeah, he flew a single engine plane. It crashed and he was eaten by cannibals. Totally made up. As we covered on yesterday's show. This study, in contrast, you've been seeing it. It's so stark these past 2-3 weeks. Listen or view this montage. It's a little bit longer, but you see it in a side-by-side, essentially. The fake president trying to stir up some of that Donald Trump enthusiasm, but he can't. It falls flat. And then you've got Donald Trump, on the other hand, showing up in Harlem. And people are turning out in droves. Clip 1.
And this is what happened, is such a sad, sad event, such a horrible thing. And it's happening all too often. And we're just not going to let it happen. The Diller family will, you'll never be the same. You can never be the same.
They didn't even call the family. They could have called. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know even a call would be perhaps, I'm not sure they'd take his call.
I think this today actually is a favorable contrast for Donald Trump. I accept the point of having three presidents on the stage with a lot of stars, but for the average voter, they're seeing Donald Trump at a funeral for a slain officer. But the optics of him being there with the family of the slain soldier, who was arrested 22 times before killing an officer, is a stark contrast to what Joe Biden is doing tonight. And I think that favors Donald Trump significantly.
Hugs, selfies, and the Lord's chicken. Today, Donald Trump showed what love is, hitting up a Chick-fil-A in Atlanta.
Some chicken, and we're going to take care of the customer. I'm going to go order a milkshake. Yeah. I'm just going to order a milkshake.
Yeah, we'll be right back.
I thought you did it right there.
I think they want to do that.
People like Trump because Trump likes people. It's that simple. Being around Trump's fun.
Come here, let me give you a hug.
Please do. Please do. Okay,
wow. That's so nice. rid of Biden.
Yay! Yay! Bye, Biden!
Biden's forced to spend money producing fake moments that fall flat.
Oh, man, you got chicken fingers. You got the whole deal. I want the root of making sure I had the hamburger.
And people are cheering, lining the streets. You know, when Trump first took office, you wouldn't hear these cheers up in the inner cities of America. And there is raucous applause and cheering all over the place of the Trump team. And, wow, people are chanting USA here. Pretty incredible. Here's Donald Trump walking in.
Look at him.
God bless you, man.
Movie star.
Thanks so much.
Gonna be a movie star, huh?
Thank you.
How are you, everybody?
They're chanting four more years on the ground here in West Harlem.
And by the way, this trial that I have now, that's a Biden trial. They want to keep me off the campaign trail. But based on what I'm doing, I think there's more press here than there is if I went out to see anybody.
A study in contrast. You're seeing them every day. One of our news gatherers this morning was just saying how that really, that's a concept that you see all through the Bible. He wants us to discern the difference between blessings and cursings. We've talked often on this show about Jeroboam on the one hand, Antiochus on the other. God also says you got to separate the holy from the profane. It's not to say that everything on the MAGA side is holy, not by a long shot. I mean, the sin is through and through. But talk about opposites, polar opposites politically. You see it with the ruling class, the elites, and then just average Americans that turn out and want to give Donald Trump a hug. Do you have the discernment to separate between the two? Can you see? Of course you can. I mean, there's lots of Uncle Bozies out there, though. There's lots of lying. There's lots of deception. It says here in that PJ Media piece, that photograph of that black woman with President Trump is a nightmare for CNN, MSNBC, New York Times, and so on. It's a nightmare for them. And so they ignore it. And then they bring out the Atlantic author who says that, yeah, I don't even think he's the front runner. I think we got a little, there's still 6 months to go. And of course, a lot can happen in 6 months. But open your eyes. Look at what's happening right in front of us. Don't believe the lies. It says, naturally, the Biden campaign had to respond. So they sent him to a Wawa in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So Trump's in Harlem and Biden's in Pennsylvania, you know, a state that he supposedly won. Leave aside the steal. He's supposed to have won in Pennsylvania. And look at how people are not turning out for him. The Wawa was practically empty. All you saw were handlers and reporters. He tried to come across as just a regular guy. It says, but the stop was another bust. Video from the visit showed that the only fans Biden had at the event were those in the media covering the campaign stop. And what made it even more hilarious is that Biden struggled to close his takeout box before ordering one of his handlers to take the box so he could order a milkshake. And then, as you saw in the montage, he didn't know where to go for that. Who is planning these stops? Who's orchestrating all of this? And why do you go to something that's almost exactly what Donald Trump did 2 days ago? Who knows? It's almost as if he's being set up for a massive fall. At least he's out doing something. He was complaining about all of the profanity. You see that? You see plenty of that on both sides. There's no doubt about it. Joe Biden was talking about some of the signs he's seeing in rural towns that are not so pleasant. A lot of people so angry in the country, angry at what's happened to the nation, angry about what's going on in Washington, D.C. Listen to this exchange from, I think this is The Five, clip 9.
look at the contrast between the campaign.
It is. Just to see a man wander off muttering something about a milkshake. He was lamenting the fact that there was F. Biden, Brandon. He owes kids around about it. We know what Brandon means. Let's go, Brandon. We know how that translates. He also has been reported to be calling Donald Trump effing a-hole, sick F on all his emails and interaction. His staff calls Donald Trump a Hitler pig. So if you want some semblance of maturity and values, and you want to show values and ethics and bring the adults back in the White House, maybe you could start reflecting that behind the scenes. And a couple other things that stand out. Donald Trump does things instinctively. I mean, to go up to Harlem and see a bodega, I can imagine damage control people go, no, there's too much can go wrong there. He goes and does it. He walks into a fast food place. He goes, I don't care. I fast food. I like these people. I love Chick-fil-A. Why wouldn't they want to see me? He goes in there with confidence. They see a celebrity. You saw the reaction. Everything else is so scripted because they don't trust him.
They don't trust Biden. And here they are, both sides hurling insults at one another. There's no justification for that. But it's war, isn't it? Ready for war. War in 24, Miranda Devine. I think it was Politico that broke the story about just how it's common language used in emails in the Biden camp to curse Donald Trump or to call him a Hitler pig, as you heard there. Devine says here, the Get Trump Democrats are beside themselves with glee about the former president being stuck in a Manhattan courtroom for the Stormy Daniels hush money trial. They're just gleeful. And now they're going on and on about jury selection. And how dare Fox News call into question the legitimacy of these jurors? They're coming from Manhattan. Of course, they're not going to lie to try to get on that jury. There's no Get Trumpers out there that would lie to a judge to get on the jury. Oh, really? Is that another Uncle Boozy? Devine says here, it must infuriate Biden that all the lawfare that his DOJ and other Democratic prosecutors have flung at Trump has succeeded so far only in turning public sympathy toward the former president and given him a constant media presence. Trump seems to have a knack for turning legal lemons into polling lemonade. Yes, it keeps backfiring for the Marxist left. And Trump just has a knack for turning the lemons into lemonade. Here's a summary of the latest with respect to this show trial in Manhattan, clip 11.
Being around, we're going to monitor this to see if he attacks jurors. We're going to monitor this for news. We're not going to listen to him live. We try not to do that on this show, but we are monitoring that. We promise you won't miss anything if it's news.
Supposed to be in New Hampshire. I'm supposed to be in Georgia. I'm supposed to be in North Carolina, South Carolina. I'm supposed to be in a lot of different places campaigning, but I've been here all day on a trial that really is a very unfair trial.
I think we're beyond the stage of admonishing someone, saying, don't do it. I think we have to give an order teeth. And to do that, I think there's one of two things. Economics, right? Do you fine him or do you put him on ice, right? Do you put him in? Mm. Yes, it's a former president.
Put him in
but
jail?
At the same time.
Joey, is that what you're saying?
Why not? That's exactly what I'm saying, Jim. I mean, look.
We talked about juror number 11 with the attorneys earlier. She admitted, doesn't like Trump's persona. Said he seems very selfish, very self-serving. Knowing Trump as well as you do, how hard is him for him to sit there and listen to that from a juror? And he's from Florida now. He moved to Florida, but from a fellow New Yorker.
Well, just remember that Donald Trump has not been in a room with someone who's going to say no to him or insult him for.
So then the defendant himself went on to actually amplify Fox's coverage, posting a quote about undercover liberal activists lying to the judge to get on the jury. There's no evidence that's true. The post appears to be a flagrant violation of Trump's gag order, which prohibits him from commenting on jurors. This trial is going to be a test of whether the system can stand up to the constant bullying intimidation that is the stock and trade of the MAGA movement.
That this has to do with something
that very well could have been the fact that this juror may have been arrested back in the 1990s conducting some type of political vandalism against something, posters on the right, and it was not revealed, or he did not remember it and did not include it, and that is why that juror has been dismissed.
There's your regime media urging the DOJ, or urging that court anyway, to put him in jail. Yeah, he commented on the case. He can't comment. That's for us. We can throw as many Uncle Bozies out there as we like. But Trump, he's got to keep, there's a gag order to keep his mouth shut. He can't comment. He's got to stay locked in the courtroom. And yeah. Are you saying put him in jail? Yeah. Very interesting analysis. These people are deranged. And they're not going to take a defeat sitting down. This is from the Washington Post. The traffic snarling pro-Palestinian demonstrations in U.S. cities on Monday could foreshadow a potentially volatile summer of protests, creating a challenge for President Biden and sparking debate over whether some activist tactics threaten to undermine public support for their movement. We've got to get them. We've got to take to the streets and support Hamas. Support Hamas. Yeah, that's right. And then, as the Post brings out, we've also got a presidential election coming up, and that could also stir up some unrest too. It's almost like the Washington Post is hoping for it. Now we're about to come to the point where protesting, even if they turn violent, it's going to be acceptable. It's going to be totally fine for that to happen. Look at this. This is from Columbia, the university, saying that the administration, it needs to cut off all ties with Israel because, well, we're protesters and we're supporting Hamas. Clip 5.
Anti-Israel protesters there saying the word revolution. They were up late last night at Ivy League, Columbia University, and they lit flares, chanted, "There is no one solution," and "Free Palestine, excuse me. Right now, they are indeed occupying the main lawn of that Ivy League campus. And hundreds of Columbia students set up 60 tents on that main lawn, demanding that the university cut its ties with Israel.
Well, first of all, what troubles me is just the double standard. You know, we have at least a dual system of justice. In this case, you know, this free speech is completely allowed. I mean, can you imagine if these were people with the red MAGA hats on blocking highways? I mean, they would be, you know, ripped out off those highways violently. The FBI would have a huge task force. They'd devote all kinds of effort to round everybody up and throw them in jail and throw the book at them. The left-wing protesters, the pro-Hamas group, we have left-wing groups bailing them out if there is any kind of arrest, certainly encouraging no arrests whatsoever, no punishment. So, again, it's just the double standard that is grotesque and the bias and the hypocrisy within the media.
It's almost like there's an extra understanding for the people who hate Israel.
Well, they are given a pass. They're apparently on the right side of the radical left-wing narrative of this. And so, yeah, they're going to be given a real pass. And Harris, that is what is really destroying this country is the deep division, a division that is being driven by these hate groups. And I would call Hamas obviously a hate group, but things like critical race theory, identity politics, that's what's destroying this country, the double standard.
He's right. It's destroying America. If you hate Israel and take to the streets and chant death to America or call for a revolution, that's fine. You're protected. You're protected by the First Amendment. And of course, you're protected by Joe Obama's deep state. If you hate Trump and you take to the streets and you destroy things, you're going to be protected. But if you, as he notes there, if you turn out for a protest with a MAGA hat on, it's an altogether different standard. It really is grotesque. It's a good way to describe this so-called system of justice. It's a system of injustice for many. Listen to Alan Dershowitz. This is an attorney that's about to leave the Democrat Party because he's just appalled at the Jew hatred that's spreading across campuses in particular, but also across the Democrat Party. This is clip six.
The core problem is DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, intersectionality. These dominate universities today, and they're the sources of anti-Semitism. This is a much deeper problem. This goes back years and years and years. And until and unless universities like Harvard and Columbia get rid of, uproot, completely from top to bottom, the DEI bureaucracy and the intersectionality bureaucracy, this will continue and it will destroy every major university in America. But don't call these people pro-Palestinian. They are anti-Palestinian. They're pro-Hamas. Mm. Hamas has been destroying the Palestinian cause. They hang gays. They murder dissidents. They discriminate against women. They cause the death of all these people by using human shields. So these pro-Hamas people are not pro-Palestinian. They're anti-Jewish, they're anti-Palestinian, and they're anti-decency.
This Washington Post piece talking about a potential summer of love, round two, following the one in 2020. The chaos erupting in streets just last weekend into Monday, following the Iranian attack on Israel. Had never happened before. And here comes more pro-Hamas protesters blocking airports, impeding traffic, firing flares, calling for revolution, chanting death to America. Listen to Jesse Waters, his commentary from last night, clip seven.
It's like Arab Spring Break is going on. Brian, you can protest what's going on over there, and that's fine. There's always been anti-war protests at college campuses. We're now moving away from your regular protests. We're now moving into what I would consider opening an FBI investigation. They've said that it's hate speech when you say build the wall. Mm-hmm. They said the biggest domestic threat to this country are MAGA Republicans. They call Trump rallies Klan rallies. I want the FBI, whoever these people are, to treat exactly what they say as hate speech is this. Because if you're having people say, I am Hamas, death to America, and burning things, you need to be held accountable for that. That goes way beyond your typical radical anti-war protest.
And another thing that panel pointed out was that in all these protests, you don't hear them say, we want a two-state solution. No, they chant from the river to the sea. They want a one-state solution that includes zero Jews. That's what they want. So you can listen to Joe Obama until you're blue in the face, talking about how we need a two-state solution. This is what these people want. No, they don't. They don't want that. That's a big Uncle Bozy right there. To say that all they want is their own state. And then there's peace. Two peaceful states living alongside each other. We already have that. Essentially, in Gaza. Gaza's run by Hamas. And then you've got the Israeli state. Side by side. And look at what the Hamas terrorists did on October 7. It says here, let me back up. This is that Washington Post piece. The chaos unfolded as the U.S. heads into a sensitive time related to the presidential election. Biden and former President Donald Trump will appear at their party's nominating conventions this summer, and both events appear poised to draw a large number of demonstrators. This summer also marks 4 years since protests exploded nationwide following the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Wow. It's like I say, it's almost like they're itching for more violence, for more looting and burning, for more demonstrating. It says here, if this continues for another 6 months, I would expect that the types of tactics deployed do escalate. And we do see more extreme protests, said Omar Wasau, assistant professor in political science at the University of California at Berkeley. Here's a Berkeley professor. He's saying, I think it could turn more extreme. says there will become a more militant faction that advocates for more extreme tactics. In an interview with the Washington Post, one organizer on Monday's demonstrations in California suggested just that. Yeah, if it's left-wing protesting, we gotta include violence to get people's attention. That's the only way you can bring about change. AOC taught us that 4 years ago. You need the violence to effect change. That's the way that these people think. Israel, by the way, had a retaliatory strike yesterday. I don't think it amounted to much. Again, they're pretty much handcuffed. They're pretty much handcuffed. And then you've got CNN for their part. They're sitting down with, I think it's the Iranian foreign minister. Look at how the regime media, they can go sit down with terrorists or those sponsoring terrorist acts. Now, again, we're at a point now where that's completely okay. They'll probably sit down with Hamas. Some of them are already working with them, journalists in Gaza. That's okay. But, you know, for Tucker to go and visit Putin, he's a traitor. He's a traitor for doing it. Lots of, as I said at the top, lots and lots of Uncle Bozies that we have to sift our way through to get to the truth. Oh, it actually, he wasn't actually eaten by cannibals. Oh, he actually wasn't flying the plane. Oh, it actually wasn't shot down. Oh, it just crash landed in the ocean and the servicemen on board drown with the wreckage. Got it. When we come back, we've got this week's edition of not News of the Work. What's the other one? Week in Review. There we go. That's coming up next. And we'll finish today's show with a short Bible study. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
In 1994, Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury asked, "Is Iraq about to fall to Iran?" It was a bold statement at the time, but over the next 20 years, this forecast became reality. Today, Iran is the undisputed king in the Middle East. In the early 1990s, we identified Iran as the prophesied king of the south. In the book of Daniel, it says this king of the south will push against the king of the north. These prophecies are being fulfilled before our eyes. To learn more about these incredible prophecies, request your free copy of The King of the South. This booklet examines the history and current events of the Middle East under the light of Bible prophecy. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
In 2023, most of Russia's microelectronics and machine tools used to fight Ukraine came from China, according to an April 12th report from U.S. intelligence officials. This includes 90% of Russia's microelectronics used to make weapons and 70% of its machine tool imports. In addition to this, China is helping Russia improve its satellite and other space-based capabilities for use in Ukraine, as well as providing Russia with satellite imagery to use against Ukraine. Chinese companies have also provided Russia with nitrocellulose, which is used in making ammunition, with parts and military optics used in Russian tanks and armored vehicles, and with unmanned aerial vehicles and turbojet engines used in cruise missiles. The Bible prophesies that Russia and China will become strong military partners in the end time. This new report shows a key area where this is already being fulfilled. To learn more, read our Trends article, Why the Trumpet Watches Russia Allying with China. Migrants committed 58.5% of Germany's violent crime last year, despite accounting for only 13% of the nation's population, numbers from the Federal Criminal Police Office showed on April 9th. Suspected non-German violent offenders rose 14.5% from the previous year, contributing to an 8.6% rise overall. Non-Germans comprised almost half of the 2.3 million suspected criminals in Germany last year. Interior Minister Nancy Faeser said foreign offenders must leave Germany much more quickly. The strict deportation rules we have created must now be enforced. Many in Germany are demanding a response to the migration crisis, but the current government is unlikely to make meaningful changes. The Bible prophesies that Germany's government will soon experience a dramatic shift. A new leader will unite Europe, forming one of the largest empires in history and leading the world into World War III. To learn more, read Why a New Migrant Crisis Could Destroy Europe. China's armies of hackers are rapidly growing in size and capability, Federal Bureau of Investigation Director Christopher Wray testified to Congress on April 11th. The Chinese Communist Party is sparing no expense in its attempt to hack, lie, cheat, and steal its way to the top as a global superpower, he said, adding that its hacking program is larger than every other major nation combined. Wray admitted that the United States is ill-prepared to defend against the pernicious threat. This is partly because China's attackers outnumber the FBI's cybersecurity personnel by a ratio of 50 to 1. Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry has repeatedly warned of the dangers of the U.S. military's reliance on computer systems that are vulnerable to cyber attack. Ezekiel 7 describes a future time when U.S. military technology will be compromised by adversaries. To learn more, read China Hacks America and None Goes to Battle. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.
There you have it, this week's edition of Week in Review. Fast moving week, and as always, lots and lots going on in the news. I left off with this quote yesterday on the show. It's from Mr. Armstrong's Let God Fight Your Battles article from back in 1980. But he said here, God's salvation is not something you collect only after you die. It is a practical, common sense, useful salvation, which starts in your everyday life right here and now. The plan of salvation, I mean, it's a process. This physical life that we have, it's our training ground where we learn to live according to God's way of life, to obey his laws, to, as I said at the start, separate the holy from the profane. It says here, what needless pains some have been suffering, what needless fears and worries you may have been carrying around, what wonderful times, what happiness you have cheated yourself out of, just because you've not realized and taken advantage of the very present and all-powerful help of your living Savior. We really emphasized this yesterday, the fact that Jesus lives today. He did die. He did die so that we could be reconciled to the Father, so that God could build a family. But he lives today. He's at the right hand of God. He's our high priest and advocate. He's our apostle, it says in Hebrews 3, our intercessor. He's busy. Request our Hebrews booklet, by the way, because much of that book in the Bible, Hebrews, is about the living Christ. This is why it's so neglected by so many in the world of traditional Christianity, because they dwell on the fact that Jesus died, that he was crucified, and he was. And we do memorialize that final agony and death with the Passover service. Paul talked about that in 1 Corinthians 11 in detail. Jesus, I mean, he said, with desire, I've wanted to be with you disciples to keep this Passover. That's in the Gospels. I mentioned 1 Corinthians 11. Yesterday we talked about, you know, looking to the living Christ. Hebrews chapter 12 discusses that. We went through those yesterday. Notice this example from Matthew 14. This is starting in verse 22. I've read this probably three or four times before on the show. I just love this lesson. Verse 22 says, and straightway Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship and to go before him on the other side while he sent the multitudes away. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up into a mountain apart to pray. And when the evening was come, he was there alone. We had a Bible study recently about rising and praying. I mean, this was Jesus's custom. I think it's Luke 2 that says he got up a great while before the day even started, probably while it was dark. And he went off into a mountain to find a solitary place where he could talk to God. And here's a case where he did it again. He knew. He knew when his spiritual supply was starting to run just a little bit low, and he had to go and recharge through contact with God. It says in verse 24, "But the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went unto them, walking on the sea." He was walking on water. It says, "When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, It's a spirit. And they cried out for fear. But straightway Jesus spoke unto them, saying, Be of good cheer. It is I. Be not afraid." And Peter, this is verse 28, "Peter answered him and said, Lord, if it be you, bid me come unto you on the water. And he said, Come. And when Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus." This disciple of Christ, he was looking directly at Christ and walking on water, walking on the sea. Verse 30 says, "But when he saw the wind boisterous, he was afraid and began to sink. And he cried, saying, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand and caught him and said to him, O you of little faith, wherefore did you doubt?" He was doing just fine as long as he was looking to Jesus Christ. And in the spiritual sense, that's what we have to do. Like it says in Hebrews 12, 1 and 2, or 1 Peter 2 and verse 21. I mean, we have to follow in the steps of Christ. And God lays out those instructions for us. I mean, this is these are the words of Christ. This is the Word of God. And so we look to this as our instruction manual, the Holy Bible. And we study it. And we, by studying it, we can know, we can come to understand God's will for everything. You can read about that in Ephesians 5. Understanding the will of God, knowing His will, being familiar with His promises, with His instructions, with His commands. This is how we're able to separate the holy from the profane. Look at 2 Chronicles 20. I don't know if I'll have enough time to go through this entire example, but this is respecting the kingdom of Judah and King Jehoshaphat in particular, and there were three armies that were assembling against the people of Judah. And Jehoshaphat proclaimed a nationwide fast. They were looking to God. Verse 1, it says, "And it came to pass after this also that the children of Moab, the children of Ammon, and with them other beside the Ammonites came against Jehoshaphat to battle." And it says down in verse 3 that Jehoshaphat feared. And he was afraid. This looks ominous. What did he do? "Jehoshaphat feared and set himself to seek the Lord, and proclaimed a fast throughout all Judah, and Judah gathered themselves together to ask help of the Lord. Even out of the cities of Judah, they came to seek the Eternal." So they did the right thing. They turned to God for help, for intervention, for protection. They were looking to God. When Peter began to sink, he cried out, said, "Lord, help me. We need help. We all need help. We all need strength. We need healing. We need encouragement. We need direction." Verse 5, it says, "And Jehoshaphat stood in the congregation of Judah and Jerusalem in the house of the Eternal before the new court. And he said, O Lord God of our fathers, are not you God in heaven? And rule not you over the kingdoms of the heathen? And in your hand is there not power and might, so that none is able to withstand you? Are not you our God, who did drive out the inhabitants of this land before your people Israel? and gave it to the seed of Abraham, for your friend, rather, forever. And they dwelt therein and have built you a sanctuary therein for your name, saying, if when evil comes upon us, as the sword, judgment, or pestilence, or famine, we stand before this house and in your presence, for your name is in this house, and cry unto you in our affliction, then you will hear and help. God, he's on call. He's waiting to help. But he wants to see if we'll cry out. He wants to see if we'll rise up and pray. He wants to see if we'll look to him and trust him. Verse 10, it says, and now behold, the children of Ammon and Moab and Mount Seir, whom you would not let Israel invade, when they came out of the land of Egypt, but they turned from them and destroyed them not. Behold, I say, how they reward us. You see, Israel spared these people, and this is how they returned the favor, by attacking Israel. That's just the way it is in this world. There was plenty of human nature and hatred back at that time, just like there is today between nations. Verse 12, it says, O our God, will you not judge them? For we have no might against this great company that comes against us. I mean, we're just helpless. But see, Israel, or Judah rather, didn't have to carry around those worries and those fears. They just needed to look to God. Verse 13, and all Judah stood before the Lord, and with their little ones, their wives, their children. I mean, everything was on the line. All of their families were in danger. Their children were threatened by these enemy forces. Verse 14, it says, then upon Jahaziel, the son of Zechariah, the son of Benaiah, the son of Jael, says here, a Levite of the sons of Asaph, came the Spirit of the Eternal in the midst of the congregation, and he said, hearken, hearken you, all Judah, and you inhabitants of Jerusalem, and you, King Jehoshaphat, thus saith the Lord unto you, be not afraid, nor dismayed, by reason of this great multitude, for the battle is not yours, but God's. This is God's battle. You just walk by faith. You just trust God. And let God do the fighting. That's the way it was. That's the way I should say God wanted it to be for Israel from the very beginning. But when they stopped trusting God and started trusting in themselves, they built up big armies. Verse 16, it says, tomorrow go you down against them. Behold, they come up by the cliff of Ziz, and you shall find them at the end of the brook before the wilderness of Jeruel. You shall not need to fight in this battle. Set yourselves, stand you still, just like Moses told the Israelites before crossing the Red Sea. Just stand still and watch the salvation of God. And see the salvation of the Eternal with you, it says, O Judah and Jerusalem. Fear not, nor be dismayed. Tomorrow go out against them, and the Lord will be with you. The Moffat translation says, you will not need to do any fighting. Now be assured, God wants us to do our part in this fight against sin. We're to put away sin, or to lay aside those weights, as it says in Hebrews 12. But then he wants us to trust him and to let him empower us and strengthen us and give us what we need to put away sin permanently, to resist against our adversary, the devil, so that he'll even flee from us. There's tremendous power right there available for all of us, but we've got to really seek God, draw close to God, and walk by faith. That's all we have time for on today's show, unfortunately, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us today. We thank you for joining us all week, some of you, and we'll see you again next time.